नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, called Status Quo, Chapter 26, titled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, and text number 34. Bhutanam Chidradatritvam Bahirantaram evacha Pranindriyatma dishnyatvam Nabasovrittilakshanam Bhutanam chidradatritvam Bahirantaram evacha Pranindriyatma dishnyatvam Nabaso vritti lakshanam Bhutanam chidrala datritvam Bahirantaram evacha Pranindriyatma disnyatvam Nabaso vritti lakshanam Bhutanam Of all living entities. Chidra Dhatritvam, the accommodation of room. Bahir, external. Antaram, internal. Eva, also. Cha, and. Prana, of the vital air. Indriya, the senses. Atma, and the mind. Dishnyatvam, being the field of activities. Nabasaha, of the ethereal element. Vritti, activities. Lakshanam, characteristics. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I'll read first, then we do it responsibly. The activities and characteristics of the ethereal element can be observed as accommodation for the room, for the external and internal existences of all living entities, namely the field of activities of the vital air, the senses and the mind. Translation responsively. The activities and characteristics of the ethereal element can be observed as accommodation for the room, for the external and internal existences of all living entities, namely the field of activities of the vital air, the senses, and the mind. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The mind, the senses, and the vital force, or living entity, have forms, although they are not visible to the naked eye. Form rests in subtle existence in the sky, and internally it is perceived as the veins within the body and the circulation of the vital air. Externally, there are invisible forms of sense objects. The production of the invisible sense objects is the external activity of the ethereal element, and the circulation of vital air and blood is its internal activity. That subtle forms exist in the ether has been proven by modern science, by transmission of television, by which forms or photographs of one place are transmitted to another place by the action of the ethereal element. That is very nicely explained here. This verse is the potential basis of great scientific research work, for it explains how subtle forms are generated from the ethereal element, what their characteristics and actions are, and how the tangible elements, namely air, fire, water, and earth, are manifested from the subtle form. Mental activities or psychological actions of thinking, feeling, and willing are also activities on the platform of ethereal existence. The statement in Bhagavad Gita that the mental situation at the time of death is the basis of the next birth is also corroborated here in this verse. Mental existence transforms into tangible form as soon as there is an opportunity due to contamination or development of the gross elements from subtle form. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasme Sri Guruve Namaha Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Swapadam. Excuse me. Let's chant. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Bhutanam Chidra Dhatrutvam Bahirantaram Evacha Pranindriyatma Jishnyatvam Nabasho Vritti Lakshanam. The activities and characteristics of the ethereal element can be observed as accommodation for the room for the external and internal existences of all living entities. Namely, the field of activities of the vital air, the senses, and the mind. So, when I was preparing for this verse, I thought if I just go straight into it, it probably would not put it in context as to how the Bhagavatam is flowing thus far. So we're going to take a few minutes to just do a quick overview of how things are flowing to put this verse in context today. So we know there are two great, very exalted personalities, Vidura and Maitreya Muni, having this long conversation on the banks of the river Ganges near Haridwar. The place today is called Haridwar. And in their long this long conversation goes on till end of Canto 4. Sorry, I got something in my throat. Hope it goes away. So this long conversation is going on till end of Canto 4. And then in their conversation, the Bhagavatam is actually revealing many, many wonderful pastimes of the Lord, the devotees, the great personalities. And we're getting many, many instructions throughout the whole journey of listening to the Bhagavatam. One of the recent pastimes is where we heard about Kardama Muni and Mother Devahuti as to how they came together, how they got married, how they traveled, how they looked after each other. And then it was time for Kardama Muni to leave, and then his wife, Mother Devahuti, said, "No, you can't leave me. Who's going to look after me?" So then they begot a son. Who was that? Lord Kapila himself, God himself appeared. Okay? The plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He appeared, and then Kardamuni said, "My lord, I've done my duty. You look after Mother Devahuti." And he then goes off on his pilgrimage. He goes off to the forest to be completely absorbed in self-realization, to think about the Supreme Personality of God, Godhead. And he traverses on the path back to Godhead. Mother Devahuti and Lord Kapila remain in Sindhu Desert, Bindu Sarovara, okay, the ashram of Lord Kardama Muni. It's also known as Siddhapad. And it's a very opulent ashram, jewels and all that. And one day, Mother Devahuti, she remembers what Lord Brahma had told her. He had told her that the Lord will come to actually cut the knots of ignorance and give her liberation. So one day she goes to see Lord Kapila, who is in a secluded place in the ashram, and then she makes this declaration or confession. She says, "Oh my dear Lord, I am tired. I am very tired of the disturbances of my material senses. And because of my enjoyment in sense gratification, I have fallen into an abyss of ignorance." Very strong, very strong, important statement and instruction for us to actually meditate on. Not just for us, for everybody, all conditioned living entities. Human beings are so busy with their daily routine, doing what they're doing, rushing around from A to B, B to C, back to A, within the 24 hours that each of them have. There's no focus, there's no thinking about where it is all leading to. It's just like Groundhog Day, as we know we call it. Doing the same thing, chewing the chewed, same thing over and over again, not leading anywhere. So, until one comes to the point that it is not leading us anywhere, and we actually need God to actually take us back to where we belong, that is the beginning of God realization. That moment of truth has to awaken in each of us. We have to know that what we are doing is not leading us anywhere in this material realm. And we have to know that we do not belong here. And we belong in the spiritual world. And therefore, we have to declare, "God, I'm just sick and tired of what I'm going through now. Guide me." And then Lord Kapila smilingly looks at her and says, "My dear mother, because of your uncontaminated desire for self-realization, I will now reveal the real knowledge of absolute truth, Param Satyam." So God is omnipresent, He's everywhere. He's around us every day. But until we come to the point that we need Him, we're not going to think about Him. And when we think about Him, we turn to Him, like that famous example where two birds are on a branch of a tree, and then one is just looking away and the other one is just constantly looking at us, the Paramatma. Until we come to that point to slowly turn around and look at God, no progress, no chance for us to actually get liberation. So with that, actually two things happen here. One is the mother-son relationship changes to one of Guru Shishya. Lord Kapila takes on the role of Guru and the mother becomes a Shishya. Just like Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was in grief looking at all his kinsmen, his family members on the other side, overcome by grief. Until that time, he was in friendship with Lord Krishna. And Krishna acted as just the chariot driver, Partha Sarathi. But the moment, this is terrible, the moment that he actually realizes that he needs spiritual guidance, then the relationship changes. Krishna takes on the role of teacher, guru, and Arjuna becomes the shishya, the student. The second reason is, just like how Bhagavad Gita was lost in the passage of time, Lord Krishna spoke that again on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Similarly, this knowledge that Lord Kapila is going to reveal to his mother, Devahuti, he had spoken this to the rishis long time ago, but it was again lost in the passage of time. So now it's an opportunity for him to speak it again. So he begins to reveal Sankhya philosophy. What is Sankhya philosophy? Sankhya, it comes from two words. Sang. Sang means what? Sang means to come together or to put together, like Sankirtan. Okay, we come together and chant. Okay, so Sang means to come together. Kya is a system of knowledge. So it's a system of knowledge put together. Sorry. So, Sankhya knowledge, Sankhya philosophy is a system of knowledge which is put together to actually reveal to us that we are spirit, not matter. It's an anga of bhakti. It's a limb of bhakti. And it is teaching us how to be liberated from the influences of the modes of material nature, and to put us on the platform to be directly influenced by Lord Krishna himself on the platform of Bhakti Yoga. So Sankhya philosophy actually talks about the analysis or the analytical aspects of the principles of material nature. Just like here, the topic is called Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. So, through this analysis process, we come to the stage of bhakti. And bhakti, as we know, we go through the 9 processes of devotional service. What are the 9 processes? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam Vandanam, Dasyam Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam. Even the small boys know it. They are not small, they are elevated personalities. So, through this process of bhakti yoga, the heart becomes soft. Love and devotion is the essence of bhakti yoga. To directly relate to Krishna. Sankhya Yoga, on the other hand, is knowledge. It's just knowledge. It tells you what is what. The heart does not become soft. Alright? So, with that, the Lord starts revealing aspects of Absolute Truth in the context of Sankhya philosophy. In text 9, of chapter 26. Mother Devahuti then asks Lord Kapila, please explain the characteristics and the material energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is the cause of all this. The Lord then goes deeper into Sankhya philosophy to talk about the elements, the 25 material elements. Now, these 25 material elements, in their undifferentiated form, it's called Pradhan. In the differentiated form, it is called Mahatattva. And when it manifests, it becomes Prakriti, material nature. And we've got these 25 elements, 5 gross elements. What are they? Earth, water, air, ether. Then in association with these five gross elements, we have got the five subtle elements. Like with earth, we got the element of smell. With water, taste. With fire, color. With air is touch. And with ether is sound. Then we got the four internal subtle elements. What are they? Mind, intelligence, false ego, and consciousness. Then we've got another five working senses. The sense of sight, the sense of smell, sense of taste, sense of hearing, and sense of touch. Then we've got the five organs of action. Traveling, working, evacuating, generating, speaking. All this is 24. Then there's one 25th element, which is time, kala. And each covering, all this covers the material realm. Each covering, starting from false ego, is 10 times more thicker than the previous one. So false ego, then we got intelligence, 10 times thicker. Then we got mind, 10 times more thicker than intelligence, and so on. So it's a very thick wall covering. And above all this is the position of the soul. The soul is transcendental, as we know. And what's that verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, 42? Indriyani parani ahur, indriye vyap, paramanaha, manasastu parabuddhir, yobuddhi paratastu sa. Indriyani parani ahur means what? Working senses are superior to dull matter. Indriyevyo paramanaha, the mind is superior to the senses. Okay. Manasastu parabuddhir, intelligence is superior to mind. Yo buddhir paratastu sa, which means the soul is superior to all these elements. Now these 25 elements, normally the scriptures actually group them into eight separated energies of the Lord. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. But the Lord himself generates all these through his three primary shaktis. His antaranga shakti, which is his internal potency. And then we've got his marginal potency, which is his tatastha shakti. Then his external potency, which is bahiranga shakti. It is from bahiranga shakti which all these elements of material nature are taking shape. We being marginal potency, we have got the luxury of being with Lord's internal potency or with the material nature, external potency. It's just like the waves on the beach. You know, they come to the beach, they cover the beach, and then they leave, they go off. Sometimes covered, sometimes not covered. So that's our position. We have the luxury of being in the spiritual world of God or being in the material nature. Of course, we chose to leave God. So this, the recent verses of this chapter then talk about from false ego, in the mode of goodness, what evolves? Mind evolves. Okay? Mind, the transformations of the mind, and demigods evolve. Then from false ego in the mode of passion, what evolves? Intelligence. Then from false ego in the mode of ignorance, what evolves? Sound. Okay? And Prabhupada says in the previous verse that, where is it? This is in text 32. The entire material manifestation began from sound. Okay? And from sound comes what? Ether. Now you see how it's all flowing. So, today's verse, we're talking about the activities and characteristics of the ether element. And we know it's the source of ether is sound. Here, ether, in the translation, it is said to be the accommodation for the room for the external and internal existences of all living entities. What does that mean? I had to read this so many times. I still don't understand. Yes. Okay. Ether simply, in one word, means space. And space, as we know, in the larger perspective, it's like air, there are so many universes, innumerable universes are emanating from the pores of Mahavishnu. There itself, there's space between Mahavishnu and the universes. Because they're all in space. Then within each universe, there's also space that forms the whole chamber. So another way to understand it is a chamber within which it provides the room for the external and internal existences of all living entities. Just like here, this temple room now, it's like the space is a chamber. And inside it, here we are. So between you and me now is space. So that's the external space which provides the room for us to be, it provides a field of activities. Then internally, within each of us, it says that it is perceived as the veins within the body and the circulation of vital air. This is understood like in the chamber, it's like the womb of a mother. The womb of a mother, if we visualize that as like a chamber within which there is the living entity, the growing embryo, the fetus. So outside the fetus, the womb of the mother provides all the what? The environment, the nutrients. And then within also the living entity, all these veins are, and there's space within the living entity to actually give it the nourishment. Right? So then in the purport, Prabhupada says, the mind, the senses, and the vital force or living entity have forms, although they are not visible to the naked eye. We know the living entity has form. What is the size of the soul? 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair. Minute. It is not here as what Prabhupada says, it is not visible to the naked eye. Now, the living soul itself is not visible to the naked eye. But the Paramatma is even smaller than that because he enters this living soul. Because as we say, the Paramatma is within the heart of the living soul, the living entity. And then here it also says the senses have forms. So we know senses have forms like, but we can't see. For example, air. Can we see air? We breathe air in and out every day. Can we see it? We can't. But it's got form. And how does this form manifest? Like air now, it's in this room, we're breathing it. But we can see air in a different form when it takes a more stronger position, like in the form of hurricane, wind, strong wind, tornado. So that's a manifestation of air, which in its ordinary state, in its subtle form, is not visible to the naked eye. And Prabhupada also says the mind has formed. He doesn't explain it, and I don't want to speculate how or what form the mind has. Then the second line, form rests in subtle existence in the sky. What does that mean? Form rests in the subtle existence in the sky. This, Prabhupada explains further, that subtle forms exist in the ether has been proven by modern science by transmission of television, by which forms or photographs of one place are transmitted to another place by the action of the ethereal element. When Prabhupada wrote the purport, at that time, of course, television was a good example. Today, what is a good example? In every household now, there may be one television. But in every household now, every person in the house has got what? Mobile phone. Alright? And that mobile phone form rests in subtle existence. You take out the mobile phone, you type on it very fast, and before you know it, somewhere else in some other part of the world is receiving it. How? It's traveling through this ether. How? From this device, the signal or waves which is invisible to the naked eye, it transmits to a base station. From the base station, it then gets transmitted off to another base station if it is a local connection, or if it's an international connection, it goes right through space to satellites. And then from another satellite in another place orbiting around space, it comes down to whoever that you sent it, they get it almost instantaneously. That's all happening through ether, space. And within this ether, as we know, it originated from sound. And within ether, there is air. Sound doesn't travel through vacuum. We have studied in science. But there needs to be air to carry these signals, these forms. Interesting, isn't it? And then it says here, so form rests in subtle existence in the sky, and internally it is perceived as the veins within the body and circulation of vital air. Then the next line, externally there are invisible forms of sense objects. It's just, I think, a repetition of what has been covered. Then the next line, the production of the invisible sense objects is the external activity of the ethereal element, and the circulation of vital air and blood in its internal activity. What does that mean? The production of the invisible sense objects is the external activity of the ethereal element. I think the best way that I can try to explain this is, yeah, it is. The production of the invisible sense objects is the external activity of the ethereal element. How I can try and explain this is, visualize this. Visualize that you are, say, sitting near a lake, a very calm lake. The air also is very, very still. The water on the lake is just so calm. Suddenly, there's movement on the water, right? There's a ripple. We've all seen that, yes? I'm sure. Okay. So what's happened there? In the material explanation, obviously, there's fish in the water which has come and just like come to the surface, probably it's just swirled its tail or whatever, it's gone back down. At that point, it actually agitated space. And air within space moved the surface of the water. So the fish actually represents the mind. The mind when, see, matter is motionless in its original state. But when the mind is agitated, it actually agitates space, subtle form. And air, which is also subtle then, agitates gross matter, water. So it is important here then to keep the mind calm always. Which is why then we can understand the importance of Sankirtan. When you go on Sankirtan, or even before that example, I talk about temple. You see the air or the space, when you enter the temple, there is a sense of peacefulness. Many people, when they come into the temple room, they say, oh, so peaceful here. Why? Because the space, the air, it is so calm because of the mental state of the people, the devotees who come and actually give that sense of calmness. The mind, when we come to the temple, it actually helps to calm the mind. And then it fills this space with the calmness. Same like when you go on Sankirtan. So, what's happening when our devotees are doing Sankirtan, chanting on the streets? Transcendental sound vibration, which is the source of ether, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that sound vibration, is spiritual. It automatically springs from the spiritual platform. And when it is heard through the lips of a pure devotee, it becomes more potent. So that is why we have Harinam initiation from our gurus. We receive that from the mouth of a pure devotee. And when we utter that, because it is spiritual, on the streets, it actually transcends, it travels through this space, this chamber, through air, and it connects with the mind of the others in society. And therefore, their mind begins to become peaceful, and they begin to feel some pleasure in hearing the sound. And what happens automatically? The soul gets awakened. So it's why it's very important to have a calm state of mind and to have this thinking, feeling, willing within the mind to be of a transcendental nature. Leaders of society have a responsibility to have this calm state of mind. Otherwise, if their state of mind is vibrating at a negative level, what happens to the others who are actually getting this vibration? Society is affected negatively. So what the Krishna Conscious Movement is trying to do is, we're trying to give this positive energy out there. Okay, so now, moving on. This line here is a very powerful verse, a very powerful sentence that Prabhupada makes. This verse is the potential basis of great scientific research work, for it explains how subtle forms are generated from the ethereal element, what their characteristics and actions are, and how the tangible elements, namely air, fire, water, and earth, are manifested from the subtle form. I mean, the key phrase there is, this verse is the potential basis of great scientific research work. So this is actually debunking or challenging material science as we know it. It's a call out to scientists out there, come study this verse. Study this verse and analyze it. Because what is the problem with material science? Material science is man-made. It is defective. With our limited senses, how can it be actually authoritative and absolute? Like in yesterday's where is that? In yesterday's purport, Here you go. Vedic knowledge is understood to be spoken by the Supreme Lord, and therefore it is free from the defects of material understanding. Material understanding is defective. If we hear something from a conditioned soul, it is full of defects. All material and mundane information is tainted by illusion, error, cheating, and imperfection of the senses. Because Vedic knowledge was imparted by the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to material creation, it is perfect. So that is the difference between material science and what is absolute truth, which is absolute truth descends from the spiritual sky. Material knowledge ascends from a material platform. So, and in this ascending process, it always involves the study of something physical. Scientists, as you know, they take something physical, they look at what's happening to it, and then they try to actually analyze it. They break it down, 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 and finally today, the nearest that they have come to is called the God particle. But what is the connection between this material element called the God particle and transcendence, spirit? That is where science is failing today. They fail to connect that final bit to where it originated from, spirit. And when we talk about spirit, who is the Almighty Spirit? Krishna, God. There is a failure in material science today to actually link matter to God. Alright? And then we move on. We look at the next line. Mental activities or psychological actions of thinking, feeling, and willing are also activities in the platform of ethereal existence. As I explained, how we think, how we actually calm our mind, will affect the environment around us. And it affects the other elements like air, fire, water, and earth. Okay, from the subtle form. Next line. The statement in Bhagavad Gita that the mental situation at the time of death is the basis of the next birth is also corroborated in this verse. Prabhupada says, using our intelligence, if we understand our constitutional position, then we just use our intelligence to understand our constitutional position and then control the mind, then that is the solution to all our predicament today. The statement in Bhagavad Gita that the mental situation at the time of death is the basis of the next birth is also corroborated in this verse. Think about it. What happened to Bharat Maharaj? What did he think of at the time of death? Huh? Dear. So he was an exalted devotee. But at the time of death, he thought of a deer. And then what happened? He took the birth of a deer. So how do you explain that in this context here? So the mind, being subtle, okay, at the time of death, if it is not thinking of Krishna, if it is filling itself with some other thought, then that thought, it is carried through ether, through air, and then guess what? That is what that body is going to manifest in the gross form in the next life, according to the karma. So it is so important that our whole journey in Krishna consciousness is all about what? remembering Krishna at the time of death. That's it. Every day we come for Mangala Arati, we chant our 16 rounds, we practice these four regulative principles. Everything is training, training, training for that final test at the time of death as to who or what we think of. Antakale chamam eva smaran matva kalevaram yaha prayati samadbhavam yati nasti atra samsaya. Whoever at the end of his life remembers me, at the time of quitting his body, remembers me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Krishna says that. Chapter 8, text 6. So that's all it comes down to. Everything that we do. And death can come anytime. It doesn't give you notice. In one sense, Parikshit Maharaj was very fortunate. Why? He knew he had how many days to live? 7 days. He was very fortunate in that sense. He knew he had 7 days, fine. Then he just focused all his attention, gave up all his material attachment and focused on hearing the Bhagavatam. But we don't have that luxury. It can come, death can come anytime. There's danger at every step. We make our plans, big, big plans. No, this year I can't be so serious in my Krishna consciousness. Maybe next year, I'll finish off my material duties a little bit here first. No, my son is growing up, my daughter, my children are growing up. Little bit, you know, look after them first. Then next year I'll become more Krishna conscious. How do you know next year you're going to be alive? So, it is so important to actually know that death can come anytime, and therefore we got to take our involvement, this causeless mercy that Prabhupada has given to be connected to be in Krishna consciousness, we got to take it seriously and practice seriously. And this chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, as we know, is the secret to all this, to actually calm the mind. And when the mind is calm, comes the time of death, where you can remember Krishna, then you get a spiritual nature in his spiritual abode. You actually realize your constitutional position is Jivere Swarupa Hoy Krishnere Nitya Das. Maharaj Kulashekhara pray, my dear Lord, I am now fit in an able body situation. My mind is now more or rather less agitated. Take me now. Take me now, because I do not know in what state my mind would be at the time of death. I do not know how my bodily attachments, infliction can actually affect me so much. So take me now. He prays like that. We are in a prison. Okay, we often hear that this material world is dukkhalayam. What? Ashvaswatam. Or another way of saying it is anityam asukam bhokam. Temporary inauspicious place. We are in a prison, we have to first know that. And when I say we are referring to the spirit soul, the real self. And the other side of the prison wall is who? Krishna. You know, we have seen many movies in our lifetime, I'm sure, where visualize this. We are in a prison cell. Let's say now put ourselves in a prison cell. Just picture yourself, you're now in a prison cell. And in this prison cell, you got these four walls, we got these little bars. It's a small window with bars. It's a thick wall. Okay, and the other side is the free world. Okay. You're in this prison cell, you've got this many, many funny looking characters sharing this prison cell with you, not devotees, karmi devotees, karmis, okay? And then suddenly you hear from the other side of the wall, psst, 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 psst. And you go answer, who's that? And the other side says, I'm Krishna, I'm God. Oh God, Krishna, where have you been? You put me in this cell. I've got these funny, strange looking characters around me. One guy always wants to eat meat. And another fella, he's always engaging in illicit sex. And there's these other characters sharing this cell with me where they're gambling. They don't have anything in their possession, but they're gambling. They're talking about, okay, let's take a bet on how many bricks there are in this cell. One guy from Melbourne who has been gambling on horses in a race which stops the whole nation. Krishna, why have you put me in here? Krishna answers, I didn't put you in here, Baba. You left me. But not to worry, I can still take you out. I'll give you the secret. Because the only separation between us now is this wall. This wall of elements, gross and subtle elements. This thick wall is made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. And you, a spirit, you can transcend this wall. But you have to make an effort. You got to try. I'm giving you the knowledge. I'm outside here. I'm telling you the secret as to how to escape this prison wall. Time for you to make a jailbreak, a prison break. And Krishna goes on to say, not to worry, I'm giving you all this information, I'll also help you even more, I'll send you someone to protect and guide you, the Guru. Prabhupada has come, Guru for all of us, and we've had the mercy of taking initiation from his disciples. And Guru is actually leading, guiding us to get out from this material world. Then while in that prison house, and Krishna outside there says, okay, I've given you enough information. I've told you what you got to do now. I'll send you someone to protect you. I got to go because there are many other prisons. I got to go and call others from the prison, other prisons. And before, from inside, before you let Krishna go, you tell, Krishna, one more last thing. Can you please arrange for some better prasadam for me? That's where our consciousness is. It's still mercy. And on that note, it's time for breakfast, time for prasadam. Hare Krishna, any questions, comments? Intelligence? Don't know. Can anyone answer that? Don't know. Let's answer with authority. Anyone can quote any reference, any shastra to back this up. Does mind, the question is, does mind have a form? Sorry, does intelligence have a form? Yeah, Prabhu? No, he's asking for a tangible form. Yeah? It's very subtle, we know it's very subtle, but actually what shape it has, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It has a form. All we can say, it's a very subtle form. How? If you're asking for what shape it is, you don't know.
It's like a similar to mind because the intelligence is thinking.
Yeah.
The apprehension, misapprehension. So you have to have a form because the mind has the form, this one has the form.
Yeah, it has. And that's answered like what Prabhu said, or like Prabhupada says, mind, intelligence, false ego, they all have forms. Goes to the next body. Yeah.
Why is Siddhanta Leela only separated or not incarnated?
Question is, why is Damodara Leela only celebrated in Kartik month? It can be celebrated every day. Why is only Damodar Leela celebrated in Kartik month? Good question. Any answers, anyone? Yeah, you want to answer, okay. Because that's when Krishna got bound by a rope by Mother Yashoda. I have to go and read that out.
How is it possible that a broken mind Krishna means belly is the oasis to suffer?
Nothing can bind Krishna except our love and devotion. So he allowed Mother Yashoda to bind him with that rope because of her love and devotion. Who's his parent? Any other questions, comments? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, La Prabhupada ki.